Okay.
Yeah, we're on.
So,
unless you want to turn out your wanted, you want to have maybe a bite.
No, we're fine. Okay. So you're done with your question, I guess.
I would. Yeah. Again, we've kind of got back. Unless you had more to add about the experience of being kind of stuck outside.
No, that was really transient, and it's never something I hesitated to drop once, I had the option to go back and finish medical school. So it wasn't really.
Unless you were far enough along in the process that you either already had that spark.
Yeah. Spark?
Okay, you said something about the second year, it finally, I think you used the phrase kicked in or what it started
There are a couple of things that, that happened in medical school that I did not anticipate when I was a pre-med or even before. One is the enjoyment of clinical medicine and that the satisfaction that gave me. I knew that would be a good career, but until I hit sort of the second year and definitely the third year which is where the clinical stuff really kicked in, I really did not have a good anticipation of that. Had I had that anticipation, probably things would have been more palatable to me in terms of pre-med and what have you. So that was one, I don't want to call it a spark, but not even a revelation, but it was a very positive thing that happened. It was intellectually very stimulating. There was so much to learn about, the human body in health and disease. And the hands-on experience in clinical medicine was very gratifying because you could easily be called a doctor even as a third-year medical student and would deal with patients as their primary caregiver under, very close supervision and whatnot. And again, the role models there were very good, were excellent clinicians that were mostly were very stimulating people. Now, the other thing that, because the other thing that was starting to develop at that time is sort of the interest in biomedical research. And that's a sort of a very funny story there. There's a twist to it because when I was even in high school, I considered sort of shortcutting all that and going into, as one option, considering many options, considering going into biomedical research, either some biochemistry or microbiology or something like that, one of the biomedical research areas. And the person who sort of, at high school there were many people who were invited, as role models to discuss career possibilities and whatnot. And the person who came to discuss with us biochemistry and microbiology, I think, sort of made me think, hey, I don't want to do that. And it's very ironic because that person turned out to be my biochemistry teacher who I came to like very much and respect a lot. I don't think I ever told him that.
You biochemistry teacher in
college. In medical school.
Okay, I'm sorry.
In the medical school.
So he came down from the university in the medical
when I was still in high school, and he said, I don't want to consider that. And it was sort of a generic conclusion on my part that I still think was significant, that I didn't want to pursue academics or a career in research at that time. And sort of left it at that. And then research started growing again at me in medical school. And I don't know if there was a spark there that sort of got me into biomedical research, or was it more a gradual process? I think it was more a gradual process. I enjoyed biochemistry a lot in the first year. That was pretty much the only course I enjoyed. I mean, I enjoyed understanding or the goal of trying to understand how the body works at the level of the molecules and reactions and biochemical reactions. I thought that was fascinating. One is influenced by role models, perhaps. The couple of biochemists there were very smart people, very positive influence on me. We also had a person come in. He was several years our senior. He had finished his MD. And that's a long story that also intersects my career choices a couple of times at least, or actually more than that, who had come to the States to... Actually, he did not follow the normal track by Beirut standards of going through residency and whatnot, but once he finished medical school, he came to Hopkins to do biochemistry research.
So in a real sense, he was kind of a model, even though you didn't do it his way, but you knew that was
it. Yeah, so what happened is my first year of medical school, it was his first year coming back to Beirut after doing a lot of training, several years of training, or maybe 2-3 years of training, went back to Beirut and taught part of biochemistry, and he sparked a lot of interest in many of us in sort of research.
Was he doing some there?
He did some in Beirut. Okay. He did some research in Beirut.
Kind of continuing what he was doing.
I think so. And, you know, some of us started, you know, poking our nose in there.
Sure.
You know, just finding out what was going on. And, again, I mean, in the setting of the American university, it was very... By that time, it had become unusual. Apparently, there was a strong tradition of research in the medical center in the even 30s and 40s and 50s.
I mean, kind of applied.
No, very basic, very basic research.
Also basic, not
very
really
basic
related at all to treatment or...
And I think with the Civil War, that was the first thing to go.
True.
I mean, from day one of the Civil War, that was eliminated.
Was the government funding some of that? This was all private endowment type? I mean, I'm just curious. Obviously, it seemed above the fray of politics for almost forever, and it was only the, you know, outside forces that kind of brought it directly into political.
I don't know what were the major sources of funding. I would say most of it university funds, maybe some government funds. But that was really the first to go, because by the time we hit medical school, which was really the first year of the Civil War, it had gone. It had come almost to a screeching halt. So that was really something different at that time, finding someone setting up some experiments and things like that. And so that was a very strong influence at that point.
And you had no... I mean, you were taking biochem class. Excuse me, please. You were taking biochem classes even as an undergrad, and obviously microbiome and all the curriculum was there. There's no doubt about that. But there was, in a sense, then a common, but not by any means the majority or anything, but a common avenue into discovery about research and, oh, wow, this is fun, is undergrads who all of a sudden are a summer intern what turns out to be some really...
Yeah. No, the opportunities were not there, and that's a recurrent theme. Biochemistry was a first-year medicine course, was an undergrad. Undergrad, the kind of labs we took were so anti-creative.
And they were just to repeat the same thing all of the
year. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you wouldn't believe it, but biology probably still involved dissecting starfish and whatnot. And
the class I'm talking about.
It was very primitive biology lab work. Chemistry, inorganic chemistry, was also very primitive. I don't think even organic chemistry had a lab. They probably didn't offer a lab for the pre-meds. There was this sort of maybe herd mentality that, you know, pre-meds are there for the grades.
Sure.
They're not there for... it was sort of mutually reinforcing a situation where the pre-med students wanted just to do the things that got them the higher grade, and as a result or as a consequence, or or as a, also an additional impetus to that is that many of the faculty that dropped any even attempt at introducing creativity in the curriculum.
Just kind of bowled over by the students, you think, or just, I mean, yeah, well, almost kind of throw up their hand.
And probably in the attitude of, well, if they're coming here for the grade and they're not interested in, you know, very creative lab work or, spending a summer research or something, well, I mean, why bother with it? Just give them the didactic lecture.
And the problems at the end of the chapter.
So, but throughout, there were very few opportunities for basic research.
Or just even to see it happen. I mean, you know, you say you'd entertain the thought in high school. If I can just back up a little bit and get a sense of this. I think it's interesting. And this guy, you know, who turns out to be somebody you have respect for and who really had an influence on you, was didn't do anything for you then. What was your sense of, I mean, your exposure to this idea of academic research and academic career? I mean, was it really just, I mean, if opportunities were limited for these people in Beirut, I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of, you knew the possibility was out there, but you know, there was almost like no way to grasp, you know, grab onto it and experience it for yourself.
Yeah, there were absolutely none. I mean, like I know now we recruit undergrads and high school students to spend a summer rotation, and
they're get more of a nuisance than a help, right?
But they get to see what the lab is about and how science works. And I think the ones who've come to my lab, the way I could see how they reacted, they had a positive experience that to me is significant, because leaving an impression on high school students that science can be very a very gratifying experience. We didn't have any of those opportunities, primarily because they didn't really exist as role models either. So research, you know, was a lot, you know, as much of an abstraction as anything else.
But it's, as you say, as the medical school kind of rolled along, the clinical stuff became the real stuff. I mean, that was no longer abstract at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to go back to that, unless you feel I'm kind of pushing you to answer my questions as opposed to treat this area as a whole. And if you want me to shut my mouth, I will. I was also interested in getting a sense of how you compared then the kind of clinical practice you got in medical school and then your father's. Your father, what didn't serve for you at first, at least as, you know, I think a lot of reasons some people are doctors when their fathers are physicians as well, is that something about it excited them, or they like the big car in the driveway if it's an American situation. I was just wondering if now seeing this clinical stuff and patients and dealing with patients and finding that exciting, whether you were able to make some sort of connection with your father's work that you hadn't before, or whether that was still, doing such basic kind of triage, you know, out in the...
I did. I definitely connected with what he did, and we could discuss things, talk about things. But that's also, maybe I failed to express that, but I mean, medicine was probably to me much more viable than engineering, because, I mean, he was a good role model for that, and dealing with people, maybe I thought, maybe subconsciously, was a better career than dealing with concrete, for example. So there was this positive influence there.
But as you said, it wasn't the drawing card to go into medicine.
Yeah, it wasn't as
which
such.
Which maybe you could see later on.
So I don't really recall ever sitting down and discussing with him, you know, those options specifically.
Who knows, maybe there's something you said, once they realized you were doing the work, the schoolwork, it was hands off, and who knows, maybe in some ways that's a really good way to deal with it. You know, your father never forced you to talk about what you wanted to do, and see, isn't this great? I'm a doctor. You can be a doctor. To me, it was almost like, okay, you're going to be a doctor. Fine.
Yeah, pretty much that way. Yeah,
maybe in the long run, it paid off, and you found medicine to be, you know, who knows? He could have turned you off from it by pushing it. I'm just, again, curious about this. For all he seems to have been hands-off, there seems to perhaps be a lot in the way of influence that we hadn't, as you said, maybe you hadn't.
I believe sort of a more philosophical now point of view. I mean, children are more influenced by the reality of the situation rather than by what their parents try to fake it out to them. You know, it's... you know, if your father tells you go ahead and become a physician, nags you to death about it, but you could tell that he doesn't care a bit about being a physician himself, you know, that's
the key.
Yeah, and on the other hand, you know, seeing my father being not necessarily a workaholic, but a hard-working, a very hard-working person, mm-hmm. Must have influenced me in respecting that quality, and I would consider myself a hard-working person. Mm-hmm. I take my work seriously. I mean, I may be very cynical at many times, but I take my work seriously. I think he has the same attributes, mm-hmm. but he never,
said you had to have those.
Yeah, at all. I mean, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I think children learn from their parents, and not from, you know, if you see your parents acting as good citizens, you grow up to be a good mm-hmm. citizen. If you see them not acting as good citizens, but no matter how much they tell you to act as a good citizen, it's not gonna stick. So, and that applies to sort of maybe the hidden positive reinforcement of working with people and being a doctor as... Well, not only as having a professional and secure job, but also as having a rewarding kind of job. And I think that maybe in talking a lot about the sort of the educational part of getting there, that may have been missing, and that, you know, I could see that if I was to be a physician, I would have something I would like to do, dealing with people and trying to help them out. But even at that time, I did not have a good concept of what it was. And I actually, when I found what it was even better than what I expected.
And perhaps it's something that, you know, even if you'd done it, your father had dragged you out there once a month or something, you still wouldn't have got it the same way as you did.
Yeah, and again, I mean, my perception from looking at my father very indirectly was a physician is someone who just prescribes medicine, you know,
and reassures people.
So you, from the outside, you just see that kind of interaction. Sure. You know, the final action, and you don't see any of the activity that's gone into providing this action. So that per se was not a very positive influence. So I guess that's when, you know, I was on the wards and finding that, hey, you go in and take a history and do an exam and read about things and think about what studies you want to get, what x-rays, and you have a differential diagnosis to think about and a line of management to institute. And, you know, I found that this was extremely gratifying.
Can you say, I think it's a good time, isn't it? Can you say why? I mean, you've described almost the kind of this one's abstract. We don't have a particular case, you know, or maybe you do in your mind, but we're talking about a case and the whole process you've just described. I think from the beginning to solving a problem, or maybe not solving it well enough, but trying to solve it, and then to making sure that the problem stays solved or reaches mm-hmm. some resolution. So which is really what a doctor does in providing healthcare, right? I mean, nurses take care of the day-to-day things, and then actually kind of maybe act as the foreshock, or what I mean, they get the message first, but as the doctor who's expected to see the whole picture. Do you know why that's a, why that's the what grabs you, or
why? Well, because I mean,
right. Because it's complex, because it's because got it, gratifying results. Somebody gets better
because
usually.
It's,
or
because
it's complex, you know.
Well, it's sort of a whole, on one hand, social microcosm. On the other hand, it's a whole scientific microcosm. And I think I may have to come back to that second analogy. You know, the analogy between science and clinical practice. But, you know, it was a very intensive experience at the human, social, scientific, personal level. It was much, way much more than... And remember back then what I would see, you know, when I was very young, my father may take me to his clinic just to, you know, sort of more a babysitting arrangement for an afternoon or something, and put me in a side room and read something or whatnot while he's seeing patients. And that's when I described that I only see the, you know, that he was dispensing a medicine, or but not seeing all what was going behind it. Even that to me was still positive, but when I saw that what was behind it was much more than that, that was very gratifying. And again, I mean, back then, to put you in context, I mean, there were hardly, you know, any sophisticated television programs on physician role models and, you know, all the processes of things that could go on in a hospital or in a clinic. So I liked it. Basically, the bottom line is, once I hit clinical medicine, I liked that a lot. And however, I think I liked it a little less and less as I progressed in it.
Less challenging, or
it
same
became,
old thing, maybe?
It became less challenging. You know, there was sort of an exponential growth phase in one's knowledge and understanding clinical medicine. But then, with time, that really plateaus. And
even, you know, the kind of changes that take place, so... rapidly, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, there's a major buffer that slows down things in terms of when they come to clinical practice. So clinical practice doesn't move as fast as, you know, as I liked, basically. So, but at least hitting the clinical years, I was very happy. And I was very involved. And I knew that's what I wanted to pursue at that time. So if you want to move on with the career choices, science at that time was an intriguing... it wasn't a career option to me at that time.
And not from this practical side of things about... something to fall back on, always being able to pick yourself up no matter where you land,
yeah.
That sort of thing? Or just
well,
also from
that
the
sort
intellectual...
of thing, and it, well, you see, the problem is, even at the intellectual level, I did not have the opportunity to explore what that was at an intellectual level. Mm-hmm. So, and the only...
So this this young MD who came back, that was
yeah.
really just a... there wasn't any... progress made, or there wasn't something he finally was doing in a lab that was really going to go anywhere, or that he could
he came when I was in first year medical school. He stayed a few months in Lebanon, then went back to Hopkins, and then, because that's going to come back to the story, he came to North Carolina. And you know, he didn't set up like the hottest scientific lab in Beirut, and that wasn't physically possible. So again, I did not have a visual model of what that could be about.
And it wasn't long term enough to kind of follow something through. And
yeah, it did raise my interest. I mean, I became aware of that, hey, there is this dimension to medicine. And I started reading beyond the clinical literature. And the more the clinical literature became boring, the more the basic science literature became exciting.
Well, can you give us, I say us because I always assume there's certainly not just an audience of one, what some of that was? I mean, do you recall? Was this just textbooks you came by? Was this the latest journals were coming to?
So, I mean, let's say even starting third year in medical school, I was reading the New England Journal of Medicine and the Lancet and a couple of other medical journals. And I was totally intrigued for maybe a couple of years, but then much, much less with time. And, you know, now I can pick up the New England or still the Lancet, and I dispense with them in 15 minutes. I clearly remember the first time, or even for the first few months, I could spend a whole afternoon with the New England Journal, just being fascinated by...
Just learning a whole... It's like learning a culture from reading...
Learning a new language, basically.
Sure, and how things get written about, and who's who, even.
Yeah. And so... I don't know, where were we now?
I was trying to get a sense of the... I don't think I was actually...
Where to get these...
How you got
the basic...
Clinical to the stronger...
Initially, it was just sort of minor excursions into the basic research area. Maybe start with a review that the New England Journal throws every now and then about something more at the basic level.
Sure.
Or maybe pick up Science magazine and look at it more than anything. I mean, not any deeper than that.
Not PNAS or...
No, nothing more, more specialized or less general. But clinical medicine, I mean, stayed as a very strong influence with me throughout my internship and my residency. The other thing that was starting to come up as a career choice is subspecialty training. And throughout medical school, you decide on what specialty training you need to go into. And I went into internal medicine as the most directly sort of where you communicate with a patient,
mm-hmm.
Where you try to probe the patient. And this that was the most gratifying part of medicine for me, as compared to surgery or OBGYN or something like that. Internal medicine obviously was a clear-cut choice for me, where if you got a good history from a patient, you could almost solve 80% of the problem. But you only could get a good history if you could probe the patient real well and get, to the heart of basically their soul, to really understand how they think. And exactly. And
I get a little more time now. It's not quite so vital to get the
info real quick. And... So internal medicine was a very obvious choice to me. In fact, I hated surgery. I mean, I think surgery selects for the morning people who are the doers, the people who have to be on the go all the time and don't really want to stop and...
Technical prowess and...
Yeah, so...
And the person that they're dealing with is, unconscious.
Yeah, exactly. So... So I was, turned off from all those and stuck with internal medicine. When it came to internal medicine, obviously the norm was there was a possibility to stick with that and then go out and practice. But by that time, the civil war became rampant and Lebanon was not a viable option at all. And to me, Jordan was never really an option. I didn't like Jordan. As a country to live in.
Your parents weren't going to budge. I mean, they still weren't talking about leaving or...
No, they became too entrenched in Lebanon at that time.
And your sister and your brother, if they're younger, were they already away at school somewhere else? Or your brother's at Caltech, but I don't know if
My brother had come to Caltech by that time. He did engineering at the American University of Beirut, but then went to Caltech for his PhD. And then my sister was still in, she was the youngest, so she was still like starting, she was in economics. So, I mean, that's been a decision or an evaluation, ongoing evaluation ever since for me. What are viable options in the Middle East? And really nothing has stood out in terms of as a viable option.
For doing what you're doing here at Duke?
No, even before that. Okay. Even before that.
I guess I thought you were still talking like in the present tense though as well. Like
It's still an ongoing, okay. I mean, because I still have both hats. Remote. You know, I carry both hats, I mean, clinically and scientifically.
And both citizenships, maybe.
Yeah, and exactly, in both citizenships, Jordanian and American. Nothing really stood out. I couldn't go to the West Bank because I did go to the West Bank under the Israeli occupation once or twice, and it's too demeaning to, I mean, I can have full, you know, I respect the people who live there under occupation. This is their home. They were born there. They grew up there. It's their home. They have to take it. I respect them for that. But I just can't see myself like taking that as a
like
way of life.
Or picking that as the...
Yeah. And Jordan wasn't really a viable option for me. The whole Middle East. I did once in my residency go to one of the Gulf states, Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be spelled Q-A-T-A-R.
That's, I think, how we spell it here.
It was sort of like a locum tenens, spending 2 months as an internist mm-hmm. there. And I hated it.
Just no culture in the sense of... something you were familiar with?
I just didn't like the whole Gulf area, okay. Basically. Very wealthy people, born into wealth, without having had anything to do to earn it, and importing all expert and technical support from outside the country to run, you know, their hospitals, their schools, their police, their army, their whole life basically. And it was evidently clear to me that wasn't a society I could at all thrive in or be happy in, although that was an option for many other people to go, you know. Definitely many of the engineers ended up in the Gulf area from my classmates or whatnot. Even some of the, very few, but some of the clinicians ended up there. So the Middle East was not an option to practice in, or that was any attractive option to practice in. The only options there would have been at significant hardship that maybe I just didn't want to... I didn't feel like... I mean, the hardship in terms of uncertainty about the future, you know, whether you want to stay in Lebanon, Jordan, look at Iraq now, or probably Syria a few years from now. I mean, the uncertainty is just too great. And definitely professionally, the, you know, careers were... It would have been downhill from that point on, definitely downhill. So career-wise, it wasn't attractive. And society-wise, it wasn't very attractive. As we talked the other day, I just didn't feel comfortable in a culture that doesn't respect you for what you are. That may respect you a lot for where you come from, may respect you for your title, that... You know, oh, doctor, you know, that's mm-hmm. tremendous. But not really because of what you do yourself. It's the title, it's your social status that becomes more important.
That's a very kind of American. I mean, ideally, I'm not saying Americans are wonderfully democratic with a small d all the time. I'm just saying that I think we hold that ideal up to ourselves that it doesn't matter, you know, what your last name is.
Oh, that's like night and day coming to this country. And that's, again, the reason
that... you say that we're great. Yeah. I just want to appear to be some yahoo on tape. But I mean, it's an ideal of our society.
Well, it is a definite point of contrast, and that's what, you know, made it very difficult. Maybe I'm, again, I'm anticipating myself here. Mm-hmm. Makes it very difficult once you come here to go back, and that's not only my case, but, you know, many, many other of my classmates and people who preceded me, who came after me, find it very difficult to, because again, you're selecting for people like myself. Now going back to my story, is, you know, after internal medicine, I wanted a subspecialty. I was very impressed with oncology, medical oncology, mm-hmm. and hematology, and those were mostly presented as a combined specialty training.
All over, I mean, wherever you were looking, not just the United States, or.
I mean, I looked only in the United States, basically.
Right, after your brief experience in the Gulf and what you weren't even...
I wasn't interested.
...entertaining. And Europe was just not a...
Europe wasn't an option. I mean, we had many graduates come to the American University from European schools, and we were never impressed. Okay. The sort of follow the professor... mode of medical education just didn't seem like it. And that's how they operate in Europe. I mean, even in biomedical research, I mean, very recently the Germans have broken out from that mold, but it's really, you know, the big professor runs everything, and until that professor retires, you know, you can't be very creative on your own. So it's a very different, and it's the same thing in clinical practice. So subspecialty became very obvious that the U.S. was the place to go. That's where most people had gone before. It was definitely important to explore that, and that's what I did. So I came here on a trip during my residency. I came here to Duke.
And this was not your first... I think we said this on tape, but this was not your first trip to the United States.
No, that was my first trip.
Okay, it was. You've been
that
here,
was in
okay.
80...
82 maybe, or
81, and that's when I spent 3 months in the States,
all down here in
mostly down here, the first 2 months most all down here.
Tell I'm from the north, down
yeah,
here
down here
sorry,
yeah
here in North Carolina.
Let me remember the details here. So, and I did an elective in hematology here. Now the reason I came here is because that friend I talked about...
Right, we should maybe get his name.
His name is Naji, N-A-J-I, Sayoun, S-A-H-Y-O-U-N.
Okay.
And he had moved with his mentor, Pedro Cuatro Casas, from Hopkins to Barrow's Welcome. And because he was here, he had made it easy for someone senior to me come to hematology at Duke.
Okay.
So that person became my connection.
And this was a faculty person?
No,
American
he was
a
subspecialty trained, you know, someone training
just
in hematology.
Before you did. Okay.
Yeah, before I did. And when I wanted to explore places to look into, he said, hey, come try an elective, you know, come see, look at this program. And it works both ways. You know, I get to see what hematology, oncology was all about,
and
they get to see me. And see if because remember, especially for Duke at that time, a foreign medical graduate was almost an unheard of entity.
This is 81.
That's 81. I mean, there were a couple of...
That wouldn't be the case, would you say, like, out west or up in New England or down in Florida? I mean, I'm just thinking, is that, or Vanderbilt even, or?
Oh, definitely would be the case in Vanderbilt.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to that. Things have changed in the last couple of years, but in the 80s and 70s, I mean, it would be very hard-pressed to find many foreign medical graduates.
I'm thinking of just, you know, and this is all, there's nothing statistical or scientific about this, but thinking of Georgetown, again, this is all personal experience, and graduating there from 81, but actually doing work study in the medical center, and then having enough contact with UCLA Medical Center, again, 82, 83, to get a sense that there actually it was a pretty typical situation for residents and beyond, and they weren't hadn't done medical school necessarily in this country, but we're here doing not just in public health.
So you think there were a few foreign medical graduates?
There were, that it was an accepted certain or nothing radically new about it. But
yeah, it's
that's just
it's very much goes by the institution. If an and maybe even much more so by different programs in the institution. So if, because now, for example, the program in internal medicine at Duke has a significant number of foreign medical graduates, many of them from my alma mater, from the American University.
I because think this person, this friend of yours, kind of opened up
there was another
not
person.
Not a floodgate, but a
not a floodgate. It started out like a trickle. There was a person before him in another subspecialty, and he came to hematology. I came to an elective here. My wife came for internal medicine. we weren't married at that time, so I was here by myself in 81, and. I liked the program here a lot. I got to know the people. They got to know me. They offered me a fellowship position. But also the chief of hematology at that time offered to support me in looking at other programs. And I looked at a few other programs in the States.
Okay, so
other programs
hematology,
in hematology.
Okay.
And the only other one I at that time I looked at seriously was Stanford. But I guess, no, wait a minute. I came back to that the following year. So I came to in another visit.
Like a three-month?
No, and a shorter even.
To
probably
just
3 weeks.
Few, okay.
In 82.
And when you say he to support you, what you mean is that...
You know, help me find the program, talk to people and things like that.
He was extending his judgment of you, not only to himself and getting you in his department, but to anybody else.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I obviously liked the Duke program a lot, and that's what I decided to come to. At that time, you know, I had gotten engaged, and my wife, Lena, came to Duke, and...
You met her here, I mean...
We met in Beirut. She was...
Oh, that's what you... I'm sorry, you told me this.
Yeah. She had... Excuse me. She had gone to undergraduate school in Rutgers, but she came back to American University in Beirut for her medical school. She was two years behind me. So when I came for fellowship, she came for residency. Again, in fellowship here, the way it was organized, the first year was clinical hematology and medical oncology. I liked that a lot, but during that year, it became obvious that beyond that first year of clinical subspecialty training, really there wasn't much more in terms of education and learning. And
what about teaching, and especially, you know, again, the academic or the medical mountains?
There were some possibilities for teaching, but...
Wasn't sure.
Well, it's something that probably I could have gotten into at that time it's something I could have considered as an option. But it's never been a very valid option in the States, in academia, teaching.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, but I meant taking an academic appointment. I mean, you've got one, I realize, but because I'm looking at the difference between being a clinical professor and actually being somebody who's a PI and running a lab.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that distinction is in my own head and not in something you're thinking about, but I was saying of a more straightforward clinical kind of, to go on and just like stay at Duke and be a clinical professor.
What I was trying to say is that the modes of, I mean, obviously, again, I mean, let me put it that way. First of all, my career was going to be academic, in academics. I mean, I had settled that issue. I wasn't going to go out in practice. Now, in academics, what I was trying to say is there aren't many role models for the teaching mode, but it's not something that's much valued either.
Oh, absolutely.
But what I was trying to say, when I first joined the program here, I could have considered a teaching academic position as an okay model, because that was the predominant model back in Beirut.
Sure.
But it wasn't a model that was much viable around here. And the other model would be a clinical researcher or a very active clinician in an academic setting versus a basic researcher. And that's when I started, and again, intellectually, I think I really could see how clinical medicine hit the plateau for me. There wasn't much more to learn from clinical medicine. And from there on, the choices were either stay in clinical medicine totally, and again, it's the same downhill analogy, and just execute, having learned your vocation, and then execute that. Yes, there are some advances every now and then. And
we're going to run out of time, so I hate to cut you off in the middle.